Hello, it's Jeff. Just before we get to the show, just a friendly reminder to hit follow or subscribe on your podcast app so it's downloaded and ready to go.
This is the Records and Rockstars Radio Podcast with Jeff Woods.
Here comes an interview not published since 1998 when I did it. It was that spring. I was on a light aircraft from the Island Airport in Toronto, packed with a handful of record and radio people for Chicago. Beers and sandwiches at our feet in a cooler, and our heads not only in the clouds, but in anticipation of what Billy Corgan might have to say about making the fourth studio album by his band Smashing Pumpkins. It was after the massive success of the previous record, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, and the year-long world tour that followed that, everyone was greatly anticipating what a new album might sound like by these guys. And there was the lingering reality that drummer Jimmy Chamberlain was out of the band, and there were some struggles with the other members, not limited to things like divorce and family death, Billy's mom. But you know me, I focused on the music and let Billy color things in. And get this, when the interview was finished, I wandered out into the rehearsal space part of Billy's studio building, and sitting right over there, my jaw dropped when I saw him, the keyboardist known for playing with David Bowie, the man who wrote and played the piano parts on David's Aladdin Sane, Mike Garson. I stood there for a bit, and he looked up, and he took his headphones off, and we talked about Bowie, and we talked about Billy. Mike Garson was learning Pumpkin songs with his headphones on. And then over there was drummer Kenny Aronoff, to whom I asked about his days playing with John Mellencamp. And suffice to say, he summed it up this way. Kenny said Billy Corgan showed me more warmth in 15 minutes than John Mellencamp had in 15 years. We laughed, and then they got down to rehearsals, and I headed back to Toronto. And so here comes 20-plus minutes with Smashing Pumpkins leader and lead singer Billy Corgan, along with original bassist Darcy and guitarist James, along for the ride. It's my Smashing Pumpkins Adore interview of 1998 that began with my asking Billy about the approach to making the album Adore.
Total deconstructionism. Take these kind of simple folk songs and just tear them apart. Just keep putting them back together, tearing them apart. That's pretty much how the whole album went. It's like trying to make chocolate pudding in a science lab.
That's exactly what it's like.
Did the songs come easily?
Oh, yeah, the songs came really easy. It was trying to turn them into something different that was the pain in the ass. But a lot of the songs came really easy. I mean, if... I'll tell you, if we just written the songs and recorded them really simply, this album would have took like 3 weeks, you know. But it's all that other heady stuff that gets in the way.
Comes from a page of Rick Rubin, the statement he made about your songs being so good there isn't necessarily a right or wrong way to do them.
Just, I think what he was trying to say is we usually choose the wrong way.
But it's okay, because it still works, because the songs are so good.
A lot of songs were pretty much brought in the day they were written or the day after they were written. So usually what we do is we just beat things to death in rehearsal. So this album, there was no rehearsing at all.
There was no beating.
To the arguments that Sue about what's really good and should be included and what perhaps shouldn't be included in terms of the group discussion.
Yes, but they weren't arguments this time. We don't argue anymore.
We're beyond arguing.
We don't argue anymore. I can't remember the last argument we had.
That was the last argument we had was when you told me we couldn't have backup singers.
And I said, no piano.
So we got piano and no backup singers. I'm not allowed to play piano.
What's
on stage.
His name? Guns N' Roses.
Axl Rose.
Axl Rose, right. Big white grand piano being.
I threatened to get that whole setup with the whole Harley seat and everything.
And look, he plays harmonica too. And like Edgar Winters. Oh my God.
So we've got two percussionists, a violin, piano player, and a drummer too.
Mike Garson, I noticed that name.
Yeah.
The Mike Garson?
The Mike, the Aladdin Sane.
Aladdin Sane is like the best lead piano I've I think I heard in my entire life.
Yeah, he's tremendous. So we're really excited about that because we're hoping to kind of have enough room in the music to allow some improvisation and reinterpretation of the songs on a nightly basis. So Lisa Germano is going to play violin. And so between Lisa and Mike playing both kind of lead style things, me and James not having to always make the wall of sound, and then the two percussionists providing a kind of a thicker rhythm track to play against. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, we're like totally flying by the seat of our pants. But
did the association with Lisa come from Kenny Aronoff? Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He suggested, and my dog spoke to her on the phone, and she seemed really interested and willing. And she's the right kind of person. You know, she's not. She's just not like one of these jaded, like I've been through it all, musician people. She's an artist in her own right, and is just really into the joy of playing music. And so it's really good to surround yourself with these kinds of people who are just so enthusiastic with music, because, you know, we can sometimes get bogged down with the weight of our, you know, quote unquote position, you know, where these people, they're just playing because they just want to play. So it's very interesting.
Drummers and the evolution of the Pumpkins.
I believe that would be no drummer and the de-evolution of the Pumpkins.
But now we have three.
I think like for me, I discovered more use of space. So much of our other stuff is so dense, has so much density to it. And really using things in kind of fractured ways to kind of create space. I think the song like Crestfallen is a nice example of that, to Sheila. Really nice, just letting things breathe and not always surrounding, you know, drums don't have to be huge. And for me, it was more about texture. Like I didn't take any of my normal equipment that I would usually use on a Pumpkins album. All that stuff stayed at home. So we were playing different guitars, different amps. So, you know, you go out and you use some amp that you really don't know. I mean, you're going to come up, you know, when you know the gear, you go out and you know exactly what you have to turn it to get a certain sound. And maybe that's limiting. So we got new girlfriends on this album. And
twice in 2 months, I've heard Howlin' Wolf's name thrown around as inspiration.
Yeah. I found these Howlin' Wolf recordings from when he first recorded with Sun, which are his first recordings. And, you know, they were recorded pretty much with like one microphone. And it's a very powerful sound, and the texture and tone of it's very interesting. But also this kind of visceral aspect of the performance, you know, this kind of overloading sound. And so it kind of made me think, you know, it's all this poncy rock sometimes that we get into, you know, we're kind of missing the point. If this makes sense, if you're playing acoustic-based music, which this album predominantly is, piano and acoustic guitar, you still have to find a way to make it rock. You know, we just didn't want to put out this sad fuck album, you know, with us just kind of moaning over sad chords. I mean, where could we find a pulse in this kind of music? And listening to old blues, Howlin' Wolf and Sunhouse and stuff, it made me realize that there's other ways to rock, you know, that it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be the way that you sing. And it made me start really reevaluating the way I would approach things. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we've used the guitar, the loud guitar, as a way out of a lot of situations. It's like, song's not going so well. You know?
So, much of the character of a door has come from the absence of Jimmy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's his presence or lack thereof, both his presence as a person within our beings and the fact that he wasn't there definitely had an influence on the way that the album progressed and also with the way that the album sounds. It's hard to explain it on all levels, but, you know, one day you wake up and, you know, it's like the chemistry is different, you know, the jokes are different, and, you know, you have to kind of make these strange adjustments. We found ourselves having to kind of think about things and deal with things that we never really had to think about, because Jimmy intuitively just took care of so many things. I mean, he had a way of playing drums with multiple rhythms that you don't even realize until you go back in the recordings and you really listen to the way that he's riding the hi-hat a certain way and then playing this whole other beat. And so when we're starting to do the music, it's like we are almost trying to recreate some of those feels, having to figure out, well, where does that come from that we would want to play it this way? You know, why do we need that chicka 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 chicka? Because that's like every song Jimmy always with the hi-hat. Just stuff like that, you know. And I also think there's also kind of like a mourning period that you go through where it's like, gee, the band's not like it used to be. And, you know, you kind of got to go through that. You got to kind of just deal with that head on.
the songs, the one word that kept coming to my mind, having listened to the album three times consecutively, is haunting. And I was curious about sort of the fact versus fiction with regard to lyrics. If I were to take it all at face value, which, you know, you tend to do the first time you listen to it.
Sure, of course.
It leaves you kind of sad in a lot of respects from a lyrical standpoint. Mm.
It's funny because I can literally say that the people that we've talked to that have heard the album, 50% say it's a happy album and 50% say it's a sad album. I generally feel it's a happier album, but it deals with darker themes. So probably both are true. But I think there's a certain kind of simplicity in the album that's kind of stark and direct, and I don't mince about too much on the lyrics. I mean, I just, where in the past I would have changed to kind of make them a little more obtuse or something, you know, but like on Perfect, where you sing something like, I know we're just like old friends, you know, but lovers can't make amends. You know, it's like, those are pretty simple lines and everybody knows what they mean. And I just didn't get too hung up on like, I have to prove some kind of artistic point, you know, I'm not using enough big words or something, you know. I just kind of let myself be. And I even, for the first time, let myself repeat words and lines and songs and stuff, just because I just thought it was all just kind of the same root. So you may notice, like, you may hear the same word in four different songs. You may hear the same kind of idea in four different songs. I just didn't get hung up about any of it.
To Sheila, I think the line was, or the phrase was, intake eyes. That really struck me as a cool bit of lyrical prowess.
Yeah. Well, I once read somewhere where someone was complaining that I used the word skies too many times, and I'm starting to question how many times I've used the word eyes, like purple eyes, red eyes, blue eyes, you know. We've got green eyes, but
we've got Annie, and we've got Martha, and we've got
Martha,
Sheila.
Annie, Daphne, Sheila, Dusty, don't forget Dusty. Dusty. I was originally going to name all the songs were going to be girls' names. Then we found out we couldn't get on the Lilith Fair because we only have one female in the band, and so I went off that plan.
Humor?
No, it's true. We actually inquired into doing the Lilith Fair, but we're not allowed because we only have one female, and she's obviously not important enough in the band to be involved. Listen, we respect all that, and we respect Sarah, but you know, it's like, you know, where do you draw the line? I mean, you know, Darcy's a very important part of our band, but you know, somehow we're a male aspect band, so it's not our heart's desire, but I just think it's kind of funny.
I'll call them and say you've got Lisa now and your quotient's.
Yeah, right. That's what I was thinking. Now we've got two girls, but we got more guys. So we're two girls and six guys. Well, we're the same ratio. No, worse. We're one in three as opposed to just, no, one in four as opposed to, you understand. Just talking about the Lilith Fairy.
The what?
The Lilith Fair. It just really makes me laugh. We're not allowed.
Don't get me started.
You're not woman enough.
I guess not.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I think you've come up with the, I mean, singles, you know, good or bad, their reality. But I think you've come up with the best entity in terms of a single in Ava Adore. Tell me about the song.
Well, when you've got a song where the first line is, "It's you that I adore, you will always be my whore." Well, you know where we're going with that one. So, I really like that song because I think it's kind of like what we were talking about before, about trying to find a way to rock without having to actually call out the guns, you know? It's got a really cool beat and it's kind of interesting. I can't really compare it to much of anything. You know, I'm happy about that. When I listen to it, I don't think, gee, I must have listened to too many, you know, Tangerine Dream records or something. You know, it's like, I don't know where that came from.
Track 6, listened to the song and looked at the title on paper and thought for the first time, as flaky as this might sound, tear and tear have more in common than their spelling. If I were about to play it right now, what would you care to say about it?
Life is just like a big pair of oncoming headlights, and you might want to get out of the way.
Apples and oranges, the odd spelling.
Well, there's this Pink Floyd song called Apples and Oranges from 1967, written by one madcap man, Syd Barrett. So I wanted to recognize the fact that, you know, I couldn't pretend that that song didn't exist. So
Track 9, I'd like to mix that back-to-back with Candio. I think that would sound really good.
What song's that?
Track 9, what's the
title? Oh, Pug.
Pug, yeah.
See, that's what I get for working Rick Ocasek, so...
It's cool. I think it's one of the...
Hang around Rick long enough and you just become New Wave. Like Rick is New Wave.
No, this whole album's New Wave.
So there you go. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, sometimes you think people are almost like faddish, you know? They do something. It's like, but Rick is New Wave. I mean, he is the living embodiment of New Wave. So it's probably from hanging out with him. Actually, I was thinking more Gary Numan on that one, but thanks anyway. I would play Our Friends Electric, but if you want my advice, which you didn't ask for, but I'm giving it.
From a sonic standpoint, track 13, Behold the Nightmare.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so good when you say it. Maybe we can just get you to say it and we'll just put it on the album before it's just you introduce it. And it's just ring. You know, like when Iron Maiden did that introduction, Number of the Beast. We could have you do something like that.
If at the end of 98 we were to do a rock epic of the year show, we're not gonna, but if we were to do, I'm thinking track 14 from Martha mm-hmm. would have to be there. At like 6.5 minutes into the song, the way the guitar sounds like a chiming clock. It's just perfect.
Well, we figured, you know, give you a little bit of Pumpkin there at the end, considering you don't get any for the whole album. So get a little bit of Pumpkin there at the end, just to remind you that we can still
rock. We once rocked.
We could still rock, I swear. I promise.
There's lots of rock going on. Just different.
Yeah. No. Listen, I'm so ready to plug back in my fuzz pedals. I can't even tell you. America. America. I'm speaking to Canada. It's America. That's good. North America.
North America.
North America.
Touring. You've begun rehearsals. I see all the equipment set up outside there.
It's brutal, man.
How so? How are you guys making out?
I'm sorry, I was listening to Drake.
My dog is on his own agenda today.
He cares
not. Touring, what's the question? I'm sorry.
Just the rehearsals have begun. You've got all the players set up.
Right.
And, the last album, you were out for quite a while. In terms of touring, what's the plan this time? What's the feeling about going out and playing these songs live?
Shorter tour. 4 months.
4 months, that's it.
But it keeps getting longer all the time.
Mm-mm.
4 months?
It's September, we're done.
Did you say 4 months?
4 months.
We're supposed to be like
May,
3 months.
June, July, August. 4 months.
But it was supposed to be 3 months.
Well, there was no way we could do the whole world in 3 months.
I figured.
So,
yeah.
Four months is the only realistic way to get around the planet and kind of cover everybody.
How much of the Great White North we call Canada will you get to, you think?
Hopefully, plenty. Our plan in North America is to hit, you know, the major cities of North America. So it's not that we don't, we don't care about everybody else. That's why it was so important for us on Melancholy to go to a lot of places that we've never been and really reach out to a lot of people. It's just we have a choice, which is to go where the biggest population centers are and, you know, do a very short tour and try to get within the range of everyone so that if it's a drive, at least it's a drive that's worth making. And, we want to play free concerts for the most part. So, you'll know if you have to drive, 4 hours, to get somewhere, you're going to show up and you're going to see the show because it'll be a free concert. And, we just want to kind of keep it real simple, very musical, have a really fun time, play in some interesting places, and that's it. We don't want the big, super, over-the-top rock arena tour. And, we've discussed maybe possibly, a year from now going back out and doing a small, more of a traditional tour. We don't want to leave anybody out of any album, but we're just trying to make some choices about what's important to us as far as trying to get back in the studio by September and start recording another album. We just don't want to get caught up in the machinery, rock and roll machinery, where it's like, we're putting out an album every two and a half to 3 years. it's not really fair to us to have to kind of try to keep all this bottled in for a year. And then at the same time, I don't really think it's fair to the fans to wait so long for another album, because there's certainly people want to hear them. So somewhere in there's a good compromising point. So.
And the importance of going and doing some free shows.
I wish they all could be free. I mean, there's certain situations where they can't be, but we just, you know, just want to have a good time. It's like, as soon as you start charging money, people's expectations change. I mean, you know how it is. If you go down to a free concert somewhere, you just want to go down and have a laugh. It's not such a big deal. And we just want people to come down and have a laugh. You know, it doesn't have to be all so serious, big, important. You know, we have to impress you with our 97-foot screens and, you know, our pyro explosions and stuff. We just want to play some music. You know, everyone else can crawl around the earth like a bunch of big praying mantises. That's, you know, I'm not that interested right now.
And I guess the impetus for wanting to get back in the studio, I mean, it's obvious you're a musician and you're a player and you're writers and you want to make more music, but you had a lot of leftovers. Not a bad word,
right.
But a lot of stuff to get to.
No, that's what I call them. I don't think we'll use any of those songs, honestly. Maybe one. I think the plan is to start totally from scratch. I'm almost trying not to write songs so that when we start in September, I won't have any preconceptions about what we're going to do. I know I want to do something really highly experimental. Me and Flood were already talking about how we need to destroy rock and roll once and for all. So maybe that's what we'll do.
Can you guys share the experience in finding Kenny Aronoff? Was it an audition in the traditional sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had this weird night where we auditioned people through the middle of the night. It was very bizarre. And everybody wanted to, you know, they wanted to know what we wanted them to learn and play. And we told everyone, don't learn anything. We're just going to jam. And so that's what we did with everybody. We just kind of played. We weren't even necessarily familiar with everything that we were playing. We were just kind of seeing how somebody would react. And Kenny was definitely the person that struck me as, you know, we played maybe three or four songs and every song just got better and better. And even in terms inside the song, you could hear it getting better. He's just a great, great drummer. He's just like a natural drummer. And, you know, the fact that he's got even more experience than us, he's a little more mature than us, is a really almost a comforting feeling, because we just know that he's not going to flake out on us. You know, not that Matt Walker flaked out on us or anybody flaked out on us. It's just, there's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. I mean, we flake out. You know, poor Matt Walker, I mean, he had a deal for a year with people comparing him to Jimmy. I mean, that's a lot of pressure. You know, Kenny's old enough and a strong enough person that he knows what he's about. So I think that'll kind of remove that element of like the Jimmy thing all the time, you know. I mean, there's no escaping it, and we're not trying to run from it, but you know, it can get to be almost like it's like a ghost, you know. He becomes bigger and stronger and better than he really was. You know, he was just immortal like the rest of us. So. Did I say immortal or mortal? Immortal.
Were there a number of people that you actually had into play with you besides Kenny?
Yeah.
There were about four others. And
five.
Was it five?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We tried out like pretty much like known kind of, you know, super drummers. It was interesting. Everyone plays so different. You would think drums, you know. It's like one guy will make you feel sad and one guy will make you feel so excited, and it's just, it's unbelievable what drums changes the music. So he's told me he's very excited by the challenge of it all, because he says, I'm a musician and I want to take it all on. His enthusiasm is fantastic. I mean, he's the right kind of person to try to take our music on, because we're so over the top about so many things. It's like he's really got his work cut out for him.
If I were about to play the song Shame, because I just think it's the greatest vocal and it's a great song.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you it's my girlfriend's favorite song. And she told me that if I didn't put the song on the album, that she would kill me in my sleep. So there you go. That's the life I'm leading. Oh, and also, by the way, it was, what you're hearing is like 3 hours after it was written. It was like written at like 10 o'clock in the morning and was done by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we maybe added some stuff at the end guitar wise, but pretty much what you hear, that's just us playing.
It's, yeah, pretty much just a live,
drunken out of
live, tune. Live take of the three of us in a drum machine. which is...
That's what we really sound like.
Yeah.
You're probably thinking, that's the best.
That's the best stuff I've ever heard, so...
It's like we're spending all these years trying to make it sound really good and we're ruining it all.
Yeah, do it live at Drug Bar after this.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Records and Rockstars radio podcast is available every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your streaming audio so you never miss an episode. Rate and review to help us spread the word. All this and more at jeffwoodsradio.com.
I'm Matt Kundel, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.